Hey guys, so it's rainy here. I have a down day. All my plans were put on hold due to the weather, so I decided to release an episode. Today's episode is about Dorothy Scott, who brings a coworker to the hospital and winds up murdered. It's a very chilling tale, so let's get into it. Go grab your weed, go grab your wine. And let's do this thing. Hey guys, welcome back to another episode. I just want to say thank you to everybody who helped us hit 10K listens. I appreciate it so much. I love you guys. Thank you for loving the podcast, sharing with friends, and talking about it. Okay, let's get into the strain of the day so we could get into the story of the day. So my strain of the day is caramel apple concentrate. It's rosin, so I mean, it gets me super stoned. It's delicious. I have the matching strain of weed with it, which is also delicious. The concentrate gets a 9 out of 10 leaves from me, gets me nice and high. I enjoy a good Reese's stick after I smoke it. Gives me the munchies a little bit, but I get nice and high, and it's like a happy, giggly high. The weed, also by the same name, caramel apple, it's stinky. I mean, really, really stinky, which I like. So I give it an 8 out of 10 leaves. It's hot. It gets me really high. It has more of a fruity flavor. It does not give me anxiety. I have really bad anxiety, as most of you know. And this strain happens to not give me anxiety and help me relax. I've been smoking out of a bong recently, and that's it for today's business. I also have my, of course, my glass of Whispering Angel with me, the rosé. It is so delicious. It's dry. Try it out. Please, this is not an ad. I do not get paid by them. I wish I did. I would take payment in wine from them. Okay, so grab your bong, bowl, blunt, joint, vape pen, vaporizer, whatever you smoke out of to get you in the right place. Grab whatever you're smoking, weed, concentrate, cartridges. Maybe you're indulging in edibles. Get whatever you need. Grab your cocktail and let's dive into this true crime. So, Dorothy Scott was a single mother living in Stanton, California, with her aunt and 4-year-old son. She was a secretary, and it was for an Anaheim store, and one of them sold psychedelic items. So, there was two stores owned by the same person, and Dorothy worked at them. And one sold psychedelic items, examples of this, not like acid, because that's what I first thought. I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. No, like love beads, which, you know, the beads that hang from your door, lava lamps, that kind of thing. So like 70s psychedelia, but not actual psychedelics. That would have been awesome, though. And the other was a head shop. If you're listening to this show, you of course know what a head shop is. If you're in America, other countries may not call it that. It's a smoke shop, basically, where you can get, you know, bongs, bowls, tapestries, lighters, you know, anything you need to make your smoking experience go well. So, you know, you go to the head shop. Back in my day, you used to have to pretend it was for tobacco and could not call them bowls or bongs. You would get kicked out. because weed was not nearly as accepted as it is today. So when I was in high school, you did not do that. Coworkers and friends said that she was kind of a homebody. Listen, I feel that I'm like an introverted extrovert where like I love to go out and do stuff, but I also love sitting at home with my three dogs and my husband, who is at chemo today. Today is his fourth round of chemo, so keep him in your thoughts. But I would rather stay home. Like, there's no doubt in my mind most of the time because I'm tired because I'm old. But I am extroverted where I can't do it all the time. Okay, so this podcast story is not about me, so let's get back to Dorothy. So her coworkers said she preferred to stay at home. She was a devout Christian, and she never drank or did drugs. So she probably wouldn't enjoy this show too much, I'm going to say, considering it's about drinking and smoking weed, but whatever. It's interesting to me she didn't drink or do drugs, but worked somewhere that sold a head shop that sold, you know, pipes, all that, so people could smoke. I know people don't consider weed a drug anymore, but this is in the early 80s. So they definitely did. So that's very interesting to me. Her parents also lived in Anaheim, and they babysat her son whenever she was working. Her father, Jacob, said that his daughter dated like very occasionally, but had no steady boyfriend. And if she did, she didn't introduce them to the family. Obviously, she's had past boyfriends. She had a son, but she wasn't really dating at this point, or at least nobody she felt worthy of introducing to the family. Months before her abduction, Scott started getting weird phone calls at work, and they were from an unidentified person, but they knew this person was a male because they spoke, but he never confirmed who he was. He would go back and forth from professing his love, so saying, like, I'm obsessed with you, I love you, and then also go, and some calls were about his intent to kill her. So, I mean, that's pretty extreme. That's extremes on both sides, you know what I'm saying? You either are obsessed with her or you have an intent to kill her. This is clearly a very sick individual, but also, remember, 80s phone calls weren't as easily traced. We didn't have caller ID back then. I wasn't alive in the early 80s. I just want to point that out. But I definitely lived in a time before phones had caller ID as well. So there was no caller ID. Things were harder to trace. So Dorothy Scott's mother says, quote, one day he called and said to go outside because he had something for her. She went out, and there was a single dead rose on the windshield of her car, unquote. So that's really creepy imagery. That would creep me out, just like a dead rose after he threatens to kill her, after saying he loves her. Plus, like, the symbolicness. I know that's not a word, but that's what we're going with, of a rose, because a rose by any other name, like, it's very interesting. The man told Dorothy that he would get her alone and cut her up into bits, and nobody would ever find her. Dorothy even started considering purchasing a gun because she was so worried about these calls, and she started taking karate lessons because, obviously, like, as a woman, I can tell you I have been in a lot of uncomfortable situations with men, and the world is a lot scarier. Women, you know, are raised to walk with their keys between their fingers and make sure your keys are in your hand. And, you know, we face a lot of things that men don't have to deal with. I'm not saying men don't get attacked, but we're just raised to be 10 times more careful. So when there's an obvious threat, I can't imagine how scary that is. Because it's scary to us to not park under streetlights and have to worry about it. So when, you know, nobody's overtly threatening you and this woman is getting threatened and... yeah, it's scary. It's a scary world for females and males, but that had to be extremely frightening for her. At 9 p.m. on May 28th, 1980, Dorothy went to an employee meeting at work. When she gets to the meeting, she sees a coworker she's close with. His name is Conrad Bostrin, and she's... like, Conrad, you don't look good. You have red marks on your arm. So her another coworker named Pam Head. I'm so immature, but that's funny. What if her dad's name was Richard? Dickhead. All right, I'll stop. I know, I'm terrible. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Okay, so she left with Pam Head, good old Pammy Head. It's just an unfortunate name, I'm sorry. Okay, so anyways, they left. They go to the emergency room with Bostrin at UC Irvine Medical Center. Dorothy stops to change her black scarf to a red one, and she stops at her parents' house on the way also to check on her son. So she stops to grab a different scarf. I'm not really sure why her fashion choice mattered at all, but whatever. But she also stopped to check on her son, so maybe that was the main thing, and then she just grabbed a different scarf. I'm sorry, I got way too into the scarf thing. Medical personnel determined that a black widow had actually bitten Bostrin, and... good old Pam Head said, I don't know why I needed an accent to say it that time. Pam Head said she and Dorothy remained in the ER waiting room. And Dorothy never left Head's side. So she was always beside Head. I'm sorry. I don't know what's wrong with me. I find that so funny for some reason. So they treat him for the Black Widow by good old Connie Conrad, and they discharge him around 11 p.m. They give him a prescription to help him because he just got bitten by a really venomous spider, so of course he needs a prescription. Dorothy says, you wait here, I'll bring my car around. We've all done that if you've been to the hospital with people, where if they're sick, you have them wait at the entrance and drive the car around to them. And Connie, yes, Conrad is going by Connie now, was still not feeling really well. So Pammy Head said that Dorothy stopped to use the restroom really quick and then went out to the parking lot to go get her car so she could pick up Connie and Head. Yes, I called her Head. I'm only going to refer to her by her last name from now on because I just like it. Head and Connie filled the prescription and waited at the exit for Dorothy, but they didn't see her. So they figure she's probably just walking to her car still. Whatever. They wait a few minutes and then they go out to the parking lot. And all of a sudden, shapeep shabam, they see headlights and they're blinding them, and it turns out to be Dorothy's car, but they can't see who's behind the wheel. They start waving their arms, you know how you do when you want people's attention, like over their head, and the car sped past them, and it took a right turn out of the parking lot. They both thought Dorothy had an emergency come up, and that's why, But after a few hours of not hearing from her, Hetty Head and Connie report her missing. I just want to say, I realize this was before cell phones and stuff, but like if she had an emergency, don't you think she could have stopped for 2 seconds while they were waving their arms on her way out and said, "Hey, I have an emergency. Gotta go. Bye-bye." Like, what? Hetty Head, use your head. That is weird. That is so weird. You should have called the cops way before a few hours went by. Oh, Hetty Head, what am I going to do with you and Connie? Okay, so at 4:30 a.m. on the 29th of May, Dorothy's car is found. It was a 73 Toyota station wagon, and it was found on fire in a burning inferno in an alley about 10 miles from the hospital. And they had no sign that the kidnapper or poor Dorothy were anywhere nearby. See, Hetty Head, you should have used your head. What is happening, girl? You should have used that brain and been like, why wouldn't she tell us there was an emergency? I shouldn't just brush this off. Okay, so on August 6, 1984, a construction worker discovers dog bones. And right near underneath these dog bones, human bones. And they're about 30 feet from the road. The bones were partially charred. If you remember, I said her car was a burning inferno. So apparently this dude had an affinity for the flames. And authorities believe that there had been brush fires that swept across the site. There was a lot of evidence that got ruined. But a turquoise ring and watch were found, and they belonged to Dorothy. The creepy thing is that Dorothy's watch stopped at 12:30 a.m. on May 29th. And this is about an hour after Hetty Head and Connie, these goons, last saw Dorothy's car speeding by them. So it pretty much stopped when she was getting murdered. On August 14th, dental records confirm that that is, in fact, Dorothy Scott's body. They couldn't determine the cause of death, unfortunately, and a service was held for her on August 22nd. But wait, there's more, because this creep didn't do enough to this poor family. So wait, we have more. Mysterious phone calls start coming in. Okay, so after Dorothy disappeared, her parents got a phone call. And the phone call was from, guess who? An unidentified man. And he said, "I've got her," and hung up the phone. The same man called almost every Wednesday afternoon and said he either had Dorothy or had killed her. The calls were always brief and occurred when Dorothy's mom was home alone. In April 1984, the man called during the evening and Dorothy's dad answers. After Dorothy's remains were found in August 1984, the calls picked up again. So they stop after he calls in the evening and Dorothy's dad answers, probably because he's a chicken shit. And then once the remains are found, he starts calling again. Okay, so remember, this is the 80s. So it's not as easy to trace calls back then as it is now. So don't think like, oh, why wouldn't they have the police involved? They do, but it's not like it is now. So the police install voice recorders at the Scott residence. They're not able to trace the calls because, like I said, he was very brief on the phone And back then, you needed to be on the phone for a few minutes, I believe, before they could trace the call. Finally, a motivation for what might have happened and why this unidentified man has been harassing Dorothy comes forth. So, an unidentified man, so this unidentified dude that's been calling everybody. He really loves that fucking phone, bro. He really loves to call people. I avoid calling people like the plague. I would prefer to text a million times over. And FaceTiming, oh, fuck no. One of my best friends always tries to FaceTime me. I'm like, girl, no. Because then I just look at myself in it and pick myself apart. And, like, just no, just text me. Like, I always have my phone. Just text me. I don't want you to call me, ever. Thank you. Thank you for listening. I've said my piece. So, this man calls the front desk at the Orange County Register. And this is the paper that had run the story about the case that day. So, on June 12, 1980. A managing editor told police that the man said, quote, I killed her. I killed Dorothy Scott. She was my love. I caught her cheating with another man. She denied having someone else. I killed her, unquote. So the caller also said that he knew Connie had suffered from the Black Widow bite on the night of May 28th. And he also knew that Dorothy had been wearing a red scarf. So remember, the weird outfit change that I brought up, he knew about the red scarf. So she had a black scarf on all day, but he knew about the red scarf. So that says he saw her after she changed at her house and brought Connie Concon to the emergency room. And the details weren't published in the paper. So that could mean one thing, that he was in fact Dorothy's stalker and killer and harasser and overall douchebag. The caller also claimed that Dorothy phoned him from the hospital that night. Hetty disputes that claim because she had been with Dorothy the whole time. So once again, remember, early 80s, no cell phone. She would have had to go find a payphone or ask to use the phone behind the desk in order to call to tell this person she was at the emergency room. Investigators believe the anonymous caller was responsible for Dorothy's death. Like, no shit, investigators. But unfortunately, Dorothy's death, who the anonymous caller was, is still all unknown to us. Okay, so that's the end of that case. I have given you 2 episodes in a week. Yay me. I'm gonna try and get better about putting out more content again, guys. Obviously, I brought up my husband's at chemo today, but things are getting more back to a regular routine. My mental health is getting better. And I'm graduating college soon. Yay! And I only have 1 class. So it's not as work intensive. I may fall off right before I graduate when I have to submit finals and stuff for that class. But we'll see. But I'm going to try and keep up with it. So please, if you like this podcast, go give us a rating wherever you listen to your podcast. Please leave a message. I really love reading the messages from you guys. They make me feel so good. You can follow us on Twitter. It's Rose420 on Twitter. So R0SE420. And we have an Instagram. I don't check that as much because I don't get as much traffic on it, but we do have an Instagram, and if I get more followers, I'll start using it more, but it is Weed, Wine, and True on Insta. Please add us. Please feel free to message me. Please, I love talking to all of you, And please tell your friends to tune in to this very fun, smokealicious podcast. Until next time, my friends, I've had so much fun with you, and I will see you in the next episode. Bye, Rosebuds. Love you guys. And thanks again for getting us to 10K total downloads. I'm so proud of my little Rosebuds. Bye.